Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival in Pennsylvania runs September 17th through the 19th with performances by vocalist Chaka Khan, Gregory Porter, and Diane Reeves, The Baylor Project, and trumpeter Christian Scott Atunde Ajua. For more information, pittsburghjazzfest.org. The Monterey Jazz Festival returns after a one-year hiatus to its longtime home at the Monterey Fairgrounds and its usual weekend in late September, September 24th through the 26th. The lineup features Herbie Hancock, George Benson, Pat Metheny's Side Eye, Terry Lynn Carrington plus Social Science, Christian Sands Group, Candace Springs, Gerald Clayton, and many more. For more information, MontereyJazzFestival.org. The Central Pennsylvania Ragtime and American Music Festival is go, September 24th through the 26th in the Twin Boroughs of Orbisonia and Rock Hill Furnace, Pennsylvania. The festival, started in 2009, will have artists performing ragtime, jazz, and early American popular music. There will also be a screening of Buster Keaton's 1927 silent film, The General. For more information, rockhillragtime.com. In Montclair, New Jersey, the Montclair Jazz Festival, September 25th and 26th. This free outdoor festival is produced by Jazz House Kids, a community education program based in Montclair and run by vocalist Melissa Walker and her husband, bassist Christian McBride. Normally, the festival would be held in a local park in mid-August, but they've moved it this year to September and a different location. The lineup and schedule are pending at the moment, so for more information, MontclairJazzFestival.org. The September issue of The Syncopated Times is out. As well as reading about notable jazz musicians of the past and present, album and book reviews, you can tune into the Syncopated Times radio network presenting renowned jazz, ragtime, big band, and swing programming. The Syncopated Times is located in Utica, New York. For more information, syncopatedtimes.com. Coming up at Birdland Jazz Club in New York City. Inside the Birdland Jazz Club, the Birdland Big Band on Friday, September 17th, the Pete McGinnis Jazz Orchestra and Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro Latin Jazz Orchestra on Sunday, September 19th, the Sam Dillon Quartet on Monday, September 20th, and Coltrane Revisited 20th Anniversary, Eric Alexander, Steve Smith, and more, September 21st through the 25th. Inside Birdland Theater, the Ted Rosenthal Trio on Wednesday, September 22nd. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Guitarist Peter Bernstein, keyboardist Larry Goldings, and drummer Bill Stewart perform as part of the American Roots and Branches series tomorrow night, Friday, September 17th at the Egg Center for the Performing Arts in Albany, New York. For more information, theegg.org. this Friday and Saturday night, September 17th and 18th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Jeremy Pelt Quintet performs two sets, and on Sunday, September 19th, for two sets, Mauricio de Sousa and Bossa Brazil. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. Harpist Brandy Younger performs on Saturday, September 18th, at Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House as part of A Love Supreme, celebrating the legacy of Alice and John Coltrane. This performance takes place in Hudson, New York. For more information, hudsonoperahouse.org. The Simona Smirnova Jazz Quartet performs on Saturday, September 18th, as part of the Arts on Site. Performances featuring dance, music, and film in the East Village of New York City. For more information, artsonsite.org. The Lace Mill in Kingston, New York presents multi-instrumentalist Joe McPhee and Strings on Sunday, September 19th. He'll be with Matt Manieri on violin, Fred Longberg-Holm on cello, and Michael Bizio on bass. For more information, bizio@earthlink.net. And new releases that are out now. Drummer Brian Hutson with Ahaya on Lakeside Sound. Keyboardist Scott Kinsey with Adjustments, self-released. Trumpeter Alex Pope with Fleet from the Heat on Steeplechase. And bassist and composer Joe Berger-Meyer with Unheimlich Maneuver on Rare Noise. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. I recently spoke with two accomplished pianists and composers, Chris Davis and Angelica Sanchez, about Pyroclastic Records, founded by Davis, and their relationship as performers and working together at the label. So thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Were you friends or musical colleagues before Angelica joined Pyroclastic Records?
Yeah, we were absolutely friends. I've known Ange for 20 years now.
Wow, when you say it out loud, it's...
Yeah, absolutely. She was teaching at the Banff Center for the Arts when I was a student there. And I moved to New York a year later, and her and Tony Malaby tucked me into their place and had me over, played some music, ate some good Mexican food, and
oh, yeah. lots of parties.
Yep. Yeah. So we've known each other a long time.
Angelica, were you with a label before Pyroclastic?
Yeah, there's been a few different labels, you know. It's not like it used to be in the past where you develop sort of a family relationship with labels, right? Chris may be the first one that I'm developing where it feels more like a community. But in the day, people would sign with the label and you'd have a contract. That just doesn't really exist anymore. You know, there might be a few situations, but Chris is the closest I've come to, you know, there being sort of a community surrounded around a label.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you next, the comparison between what you've experienced at other labels and what's happening now with Pyroclastic.
I mean, sure. Labels, to have a label, it's a labor of love, most definitely, because it's a very hard industry these days, given the digital, when the digital age started, to make money to survive, right, and support artists at the same time. So many labels don't take the risk. They put all the risk on the artist, where they recoup everything they've spent to produce and put out a record, and the artist pays that, right? I even have labels that I work with where you don't even get free copies of your own recording, right? You have to pay for them. And that's more and more the norm these days, because it has to be, otherwise there would be no labels, because they cannot survive. I always preach to students, you know, don't use the streaming services, because it just takes food right off of the table of artists, you know. So I understand why labels have gone to the model they're using. Chris is holding on to an old idea, but we're all glad that she is.
And Chris, I'll direct this to you. What is the structure for a pyroclastic recording? How much of a finished product is done in-house or in your house?
Well, it's all done out of house, out of my house. We work with a printer. We work with various graphic artists. I work closely with a producer, David Breskin, who does a lot of the covers for the albums and helps produce some of the music. We have a publicist. The label is, I turned it into a nonprofit about 3 years ago now. And so it sort of operates underneath this umbrella of the not-for-profit model. And people are hired based on, you know, kind of on a need basis. So that's it in a nutshell, I guess.
Chris, as a performing artist, in 2016, you started a record label. Who were some of the first clients that you invited to Pyroclastic?
Corey Smythe is one of them, Craig Taborn. I put two records out on my of my own on the label at first, an album called Duopoly and another one called Octopus, a duo with Craig Taborn. And then from there, when the label turned into a not-for-profit, that was the point when I started inviting other artists. So Corey Smythe, Angelica Sanchez, Marilyn Crispell, Benoit Delbecq, lots of pianists. I'm naming all the pianists here. I mostly piano. And others, Eric Rivas, Chris Lightcap. Yeah, it just keeps growing and growing. Sylvie Courvoisier and Mary Halverson are putting out a record in a couple weeks. Tony Malaby. Yeah, it just keeps growing.
So let's do a comparison. It's been 5 years. What sticks out in your mind, the big change from 2016 to now in 2021, running this label?
I think I didn't realize how much work it was going to be, actually.
Isn't this why you have children? Children are there to help stuff envelopes and fix little wires because they've got little tiny fingers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing any of that type of work for the label. So it's mostly email and phone calls. Unfortunately, he can't help with that quite yet. Yeah, it's a lot of work, and to do it right, to make sure we're always serving the artists. I mean, that's the mission of the label and our not-for-profit, is to support artists in their work and the dissemination of their work. So it just takes a lot to make sure that they are supported, that we're representing their projects in the best way that we can, and presenting them to the public, you know, in a way that they feel good about and that we feel good about. So, yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, who's the we?
Oh, I mean, I am sort of the face of the label, the president, but the people that I work with, the publicist, I have a wonderful operations manager. We have a board of directors that we are also responsible to. So it's a lot. There's a lot of people involved. It's not just me, you know, doing all the work here.
At one time, having your music played on the radio was the way for an artist to connect to their fans. Now it's through social media. And as we've talked about already, streaming services as well. What has been your relationship with Radio Angelica as an artist and Chris as a label owner? We'll start with Angelica.
Sure. I mean, I don't really have a relationship with any of the radio stations. I have friends that have radio shows, and they will oftentimes play recordings of mine and let me know that they're playing recordings. But I haven't had a real relationship with the radio station where they're playing it on a regular basis. It's usually friends that have shows, right? Or it's WKCR, or you know, the radio stations that are interested in playing music that might be more challenging for the ear, right? So. So yeah, it's oftentimes you don't know when you're going to have any kind of radio play. There was this weird, wasn't weird, but I did one of the NPR morning edition shows because I put out a recording that had toy piano, and they were very interested in the toy piano, not so much the music. So I did the morning radio show with Scott Simon. That was an interesting situation. But on a regular basis, I don't really have a real relationship with the radio station.
So for feedback, do you rely on Facebook, Twitter, emails to find out how listeners are perceiving your music?
Sure. I mean, now that concerts are starting up, that's another way people let you know. But mostly I'll get emails from people or they'll comment on Facebook. I do use Facebook for to get the word out. And I get a lot of feedback that way. But that's basically it.
Okay. And Chris?
Well, the radio seems to be another platform in which audience can find out what we're putting out and, you know, help announce when new things come up, when new projects are announced. So it's just another avenue for audience to discover, you know, what we're doing, among other, you know, things like publications or, you know, interviews that the artist might do, also social media. But, you know, it is a piece of the equation. So I do a fair number of radio interviews throughout the year.
Let's talk about what's coming up. Angelica, you had the release How to Turn the Moon that was last year with pianist Marilyn Crispell. What's next for you?
I just finished recording my Nonet, and now we're in the process of mixing. So that's going to be the next project that's coming out. And then I'm also scheduled to record this year a trio, Michael Formanek and Billy Hart. I'm very excited about that. I'm playing some music that's not my own, and also some original music. So that's what's coming up.
And for Chris, you mentioned there are a couple of duets coming out, one with bassoonist Sarah Schoenbeck and the others with guitarist Mary Halverson.
Yes, and Sylvie Courvoisier, and then also an album by Tony Malaby.
Good. Ladies, this is where I leave the last words of the interview to you both.
I would say for anyone that's interested in the music, or maybe you're new to the music, and I say this to everyone, including my students too, try to listen to the music without judging it. Just let it roll over you and experience what you're going to experience without any judgment. Just try that.
Just to add to that, I mean, we've all had that experience of listening to something, you know, 10, 20 years ago and remembering how much we disliked that recording for whatever reason, and then coming back to it 10 or 20 years later and just thinking, wow, this is so hip, you know, what was I missing? And so it's, you know, it's a discovery, it's a process of discovery, and it's important to stay open. And I teach at Berkeley, and that's something that always the instructors and professors are trying to instill in their students, stay open, you know. So I agree with you, Ange.
Yeah, the music gets an emotional response from you, good or bad. It's still good. Just go with it.
For more information on Pyroclastic Records, pyroclasticrecords.com. And for more information on Angelica Sanchez, angelicasanchez.com. And now for some music. Thank you. solo piano work by Faulkner Evans. Invisible Words on Consolidated Artist Productions came out last month. From it we heard Made Visible. Evans says that the release is a snapshot of his late wife Linda, as well as an integral part of his healing process. From the upcoming release by pianist, composer, and multi-instrumentalist Gabriel Zucker, titled Leftover Beats from the Edge of Time on ESP Disc. From it we heard Stage Whisper. The release will become available on September 24th, and there's an album release show scheduled for Tuesday, October 5th, at Brooklyn, New York's Roulette. And we began with harpist, composer, and educator Brandy Younger with Love and Struggle from her debut release on Impulse Records, Something Different, blending jazz, R&B, hip-hop, rock, and classical music. Alan Mednard on drums and Rasan Carter on bass. She performs on Saturday, September 18th at Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House in Hudson, New York, as part of A Love Supreme, celebrating the legacy of Alice and John Coltrane. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My guest is Josh Landris, owner of J. Landris Brass, LLC in New York City, specializing in brass repair and restorations, instrument sales, and consignment. Thank you, Josh, for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. What was the first instrument that you refurbished?
So the first instrument I refurbished was actually my dad's childhood clarinet. And I did that when I started apprenticing when I was 13 years old.
So you learned about refurbishing on your own, or did you complete an apprenticeship, or did that just happen simultaneously?
So when I was a kid in middle school, I would take the band instruments home and take them apart and fiddle with them and things like that. And my parents and music teachers got together and said, hey, maybe Josh should repair instruments. So I started an apprenticeship at a repair shop that was at the music store that I had started taking guitar lessons at when I was six. So I already had a pretty good involvement with the music store and the owners, and they knew me very well and watched me grow up. And my parents said, give him a job, teach him, you don't need to pay him, and let's see how it goes. And that's how I got my foot in the door and starting to repair.
Sounds like your parents wanted to keep you busy.
Yeah, they definitely wanted to keep me busy. You know, boys will be boys and get in a lot of trouble. And this was one way to keep me out of trouble.
So woodwinds fall into your purview?
Not so much. The first instrument I did was a clarinet. And then after that, it was all brass.
Got it.
But they wanted to see if I was able to do something. And my dad kind of volunteered up his clarinet that had sat in the closet for many, 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 many years. And if I had messed it up, it wouldn't be too big of a deal. So they started on that to just see if I could kind of get the gist of it, which I did. And then from there, it was straight on to brass, being a brass player.
When I brought my French horn into you in September of 2017 in New York City, you were located at 153 West 36th Street.
Yes, that is correct.
Now you're at 38 West 32nd Street. What Yes. prompted the move?
So I was at the 153 West 36th Street location for 8 years since I started my business and branched out on my own. As things go with commercial leases, my lease was up and my landlord in that building was raising my rent a ridiculous amount of money, which I had kind of outgrown the space and there were some issues with the building and she was just being very, very, very unreasonable. So thankfully I had a client whose kid's trumpet I was fixing, who owns a couple buildings in Koreatown, which is 32nd Street in Midtown Manhattan. And, you know, I told them what was going on and they had, you know, some spaces available. And on March 6th, 2020, so right before the shutdown, I signed a lease for the building that we're in now.
Nice to have friends.
Nice to have friends, but a very stressful time to sign a lease, not knowing that there was going to be a pandemic right. and a shutdown for businesses a week later.
Yeah. So who's on staff and what are their specified craftsmanships?
So I have... seven employees now. I hired someone on Friday because we've been busy, thankfully. So I have, besides myself in the repair shop, I have four other technicians in the repair shop. I have Kevin, who's my low brass specialist. He's a tuba player and specializes in trombones and tubas and baritones and low brass. I have Jesus, who is my French horn expert. He does most of the French horn work of rebuilds and valve work and things like that. I have Matt, who does a lot of trumpet restoration work and really good at taking trumpets apart and making them great. I have Atis, who is responsible for generally most of the cleanings of the instruments and a lot of the assembly work, as well as alignment work and things like that. And then myself in the shop and I do everything from mouthpiece work to restorations and filling in where I need to. I have Garrett, who runs my retail in the front of the house, who's a fantastic trumpet player and very knowledgeable of brass instruments. And then JT, who handles my social media and online presence, as well as our photographs for our website.
You know, it yeah. seems like you're all having fun with the Jay Landris Brass newsletter.
Yes.
Yeah. Not only does it display new and refurbished instruments, but cool and fashionable accessories, featuring a community gig calendar that folks mm-hmm. can contribute to, and relaxing sounds of brass being grinded and drilled and torched. I yes. love that Facebook post of that. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But I'd like for you to relate the story on Dizzy Gillespie's horn. You wrote about it in one of your August newsletters.
Yes. So amazingly enough, this was the second one of Dizzy Gillespie's trumpets that I've gotten to restore and work on. The first one I worked on was maybe in 2013. And it was one that had been smashed and somebody straightened the bell. And, you know, we made that really beautiful. But most recently in August, we had a gentleman who had purchased Dizzy's trumpet in the 90s at auction. And it basically sat unused from when Dizzy Gillespie had gifted it to a friend in 1970. So it sat unused then and then was auctioned off. I think it was 95. And the gentleman who had it wanted to, you know, get it back into a good shape. It had been banged around and braces were broken and some big dents and things like that from it just being, you know, moved around and not, I wouldn't say neglected, but kind of banged around and moved around and sitting unused. So I was very fortunate to work on that one. And with that one, it had a very interesting story behind it. Apparently from the paperwork that was with the trumpet, it was the bellow was taken off several different instruments and put on different bodies. And Dizzy was trying to do things to make it more structurally sound over the years. It was the third valve section that the bell had been on, and the bent section was supposedly from the first trumpet that was tripped over that got the bell bent up. So it was a really neat piece of history, and really amazing to be able to work on something that, you know, made such epic music that Dizzy recorded on. And really an honor that somebody would entrust me with that instrument to show it the respect that it deserves.
Wow. Wow. So now I have to ask the question, what has been the worst DIY repair that has been brought into your shop where you and your staff just go, how could you?
Oh, geez. We've seen a lot of things, everything from, you know, instruments being held together with epoxy, or we've even seen instruments where somebody, a brace had come unsoldered and maybe a dad or somebody drilled through the brace and put screws into it to hold the instrument together.
Oh, no.
We've seen things held together with putty and chewing gum. Years ago, somebody had brought in an instrument where they wrapped the bell in lead wire and then covered it in epoxy to hold the lead in place. And it was like a clear, you know, 5-minute epoxy all over the whole instrument.
But that sounds more like an art project.
It does sound like an art project, but when people are trying to play things, it's, you know, art meets music to a certain point, but sometimes it's a little abusive to the instrument.
So you see a lot of people coming in and out. Who are some of your clients? I mean, I'm sure you see students, orchestra pit players.
Yeah, we see a really wide variety of musician and music enthusiasts who come into the store. Everything to your homeless musician who plays on the subway and lives on the street, to super famous people like Wynton Marsalis and Chris Botti. Primarily our business is with professional musicians. So Broadway players, orchestra players, your jazz musician who's playing in a big band or has a combo. We see everything. We see kids. I really enjoy having kids come into the store because that's the next generation of musician. And I've even, you know, being in New York now 19 years, I've seen kids who, you know, I knew them in middle school, but when they first started playing instruments, who are now established professional musicians. And it's really cool to see the growth of a student to become, you know, a professional and making records and going on tour with groups. So it's really inspiring to have such a wide variety of people come in.
Wow. How long have you been in business?
So this week makes 9 years that I've been in business on my own. Before that, I worked for Sam Ash Music. I worked for them for almost 11 years before opening up my own store. And it's really been a really wonderful 9 years.
As a small business, what can you comment on coming out of, well, we're not really out of it, but after a year and a half of COVID-19?
Yeah, it was, the last year and a half was very stressful, especially when the shutdown first happened. I didn't know if my business would survive. You know, when the first round of the PPP loans came out, I missed out on that, like many small businesses did. And there was just a lot of gloom in my world, you know, not knowing what the future would entail. The last year up until this summer was also really stressful. Musicians weren't working. People in orchestras, you know, weren't playing. Jazz clubs you know, some were open and doing live streams, but there wasn't a lot of work for your musician. So that trickle down factor of musicians not being able to work means they can't necessarily spend with here. In my business, and my number one priority was to keep my staff whole. Being, you know, that my staff were very much a family here. I couldn't imagine being in business without one person on my staff. So it was very important to me to make sure that they were taken care of. And, you know, thankfully I was able to keep everyone employed after we came back to work in July of last year, when the phases in New York cycled, that we were able to open. And that was the most really important thing to me, because without my staff, I really don't have a business. I wouldn't be able to accommodate musicians, and I couldn't do it all myself. And if I had to, you know, lay somebody off or something like that during the time, they wouldn't have been able to stay in New York, so that when things got better, I wouldn't have that person. So that was my primary focus, was to be able to keep my doors open for my employees. There was also a lot of support from the community. People were purchasing gift cards and things like that, even if they couldn't afford a lot. The community really wanted us to stay open, being that we're the last brass instrument, you know, dedicated brass instrument store in New York City.
Josh, this is where I give my guest the last word. If there's something I didn't ask you and you'd like to talk about it, express an idea and a thought.
What I really want to say to everyone is to please get vaccinated, wear a mask. The music world and the arts world really depends on it. I see now, unfortunately, tours starting to get canceled and musicians starting to be out of work again because of the Delta variant. And I think it's really important that we come together as a community, as a society, and look out for our brothers and sisters and try to keep everybody healthy, so that we can have arts and have music and have the things that we really enjoy and love, and the things that spark an emotional response, such as listening to a record or seeing a concert. And really that's the most I can encourage people to do, is to get vaccinated.
To learn more about J. Landris Brass, jlandrisbrass.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org. Or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.